Welcome to Ask a Doctor, what your doctor wants you to know with Dr. Virgie. Over the next hour, you'll learn valuable medical tips from health policy to personal finance and medical debt management. Now listen close and welcome your host, Dr. Virgie Bright Ellington.
I'm Dr. Virgie Bright Ellington, and on this week's segment of What Your Medical Debt Doctor Wants You to Know, we're going to talk about the 10 things everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis. But before we do that, I want to talk about something that I went over last week in last week's episode, where we talked about the phrase or the abbreviation HIPAA. And last week we were talking about HIPAA because I like to remind us that if you're having a hard time having a medical billing representative from your provider where you receive care and you're calling to ask for your medical bill that is itemized, you're asking for an itemized bill with CPT codes. And if you're having a hard time, meaning the response you get is vague, or we don't have that kind of bill here that you're asking for, but we can send you a detailed bill, which is not what you're asking for. A detailed bill, if it doesn't have CPT codes on it, then if it doesn't contain CPT codes, it's not an accurate bill. It's not an itemized bill. An itemized bill has CPT codes. So we were talking about that last week. And I like to remind folks that when you are calling to ask for your medical bill with CPT codes, that if you're given a hard time or given kind of like vague answers, but they're saying anything but yes, where can we send this? What's your address or what's your email address? Your response needs to be, quote, I am requesting my medical bill with CPT codes as per HIPAA law, unquote. So I said HIPAA stands for Health Information Privacy and Accessibility Act. And that's not true. It just hit me. I don't know why it took me like 3 or 4 days to remember, hey, I said HIPAA stands for Health Insurance or Health Information Privacy Act. And I just wanted to clarify that because HIPAA actually stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. So let me explain. Back in 1996, when HIPAA was made into law, Congress was largely concerned with issues like helping people maintain health insurance when they change jobs. So that's why you have the term Health Insurance Portability Act. Now, the accountability part of the act is what most of us over the past more than 25 years have come to understand or feel that really, I shouldn't say feel because that's an emotion, has nothing to do with money, right? Understand by law that the act is very much regulating privacy of Americans' medical health records and information. So the accountability references that every healthcare provider and health insurance company has to protect your personal health information above all else. It is yours and no one else's. And all healthcare providers, anyone that's provided health or medical care to you, and your health insurance companies are held accountable. And that's where the word accountable comes into the phrase Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Comes into the phrase because they're held accountable, and their vendors, like associated vendors, like a pharmacy company, They are held responsible for keeping your information private, your personally identifiable medical data private. So I just wanted to clarify that over the years, because of the accountability, privacy accountability part of that act, we've all come to know and love the phrase HIPAA, you got to give me my information and you got to keep it private. So people have thought that over the years that HIPAA applies to everything, and that's not true. So I just wanted to clarify that the same piece of information that's protected at a doctor's office is totally unregulated in other settings. So an example of HIPAA not covering information about your health or medical issues are things like if you plug in a web search, if you're doing a search online, if you're Googling it, that's not covered. If you're talking about your healthcare or care that's been provided to you or medical bills or anything related to your healthcare in any setting other than your doctor's doctor's office, hospital setting, medical care setting, and or health insurance setting or affiliate or associate like a pharmacy. So other than like a web search, a smartwatch where you put in your health information, it tracks your vital signs, that kind of thing, period trackers, other kind of health apps, they're not covered by HIPAA. If you are talking about your information in public, let's say you call into a radio show and you say, you know what, after my heart attack, this, and this happened. That's not protected by HIPAA. Anytime you volunteer the information outside of a healthcare or medical care setting and or your health insurance and their affiliates or associates, that's not covered by HIPAA because you volunteered it. HIPAA only covers and holds accountable your healthcare providers, medical care providers, and health insurance companies and their direct associates, like affiliated vendors, like pharmacies. Other things that as an example, apparently a reporter asked a politician if she was vaccinated or not. And she responded, well, that's information that's private and protected by HIPAA. I can't share that information. No, you can talk about your health as much as you want. HIPAA does not cover you talking about your health or your medical issues, or whether you're vaccinated or not, or anything like that, anything related. So I just wanted to clarify that if you get a bill that is not an itemized bill, it's not an accurate bill, it's not an itemized bill because it doesn't have CPT codes, then when you call, that's step one of the three steps of the only right way to pay a medical bill. When you do step one, and call the provider and ask for an itemized bill with CPT codes, and they give you a hard time or they're obtuse or act like they don't know what you mean, say very clearly, quote, medical bill with CPT codes as per HIPAA law, unquote. So I just wanted to clarify that. So let's get started. The 10 things everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis. So people know, or at least have heard, that medical bills are now the number one cause of debt and bankruptcy in the United States. But there's more behind the story. Americans now owe $1 trillion in medical bills, which are at risk of ruining the financial future of hundreds of thousands of folks living in the United States. So here's what you need to know to make sure it doesn't happen to you. Number one, the next COVID-19 pandemic wave is medical bills. At the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, insurance companies and the federal government tried to help struggling Americans, including waiving out-of-pocket charges for testing and treatment and reimbursing hospitals that treated uninsured patients. The problem is Not all sick patients with symptoms were tested for COVID-19 because tests had been in short supply early in the pandemic and throughout many parts of the country. Also, and this is really important, if the correct COVID-19 CPT and ICD-10 billing codes in the claims are not submitted by the provider who evaluated and treated your COVID-19 symptoms, your care may not be covered for this reason by your insurance plan. So insurance companies, because of this, are directing their members to reach out to them and or appeal a claim if they suspect a mistake and their claim for treatment for COVID-19 was denied. So I mentioned CPT codes as step one of the three steps, the first step of the three steps of the only right way to pay a medical bill. And that is to call your provider to ask for an itemized medical bill, an itemized bill with CPT codes. CPT codes stands for, CPT stands for Common Procedural Terminology, which is why no one uses no one uses the full name, the formal name. We just call it CPT codes. Actually, I keep thinking about this. A radio host likes to call CPT codes. He says, you know what? It stands for can't pay this. CPT codes stand for can't pay this codes. But anyway, CPT codes are just like barcodes in a store. When you go into a store, every product has a barcode that you take and you swipe it to get the price. It's the same exact thing with every medical service, treatment, test, intervention that is performed in the United States. Every medical service has a CPT code. You run the CPT code through and the provider uses that to determine that code to determine the price of the service that they're providing. And insurance companies, whether it's the government insurance like Medicare or Medicaid and private insurance companies, they all use CPT codes to determine how much they're going to pay for that service. So I wanted to clarify that when you get a bill, if you were treated for COVID-19 and there is a CPT code that does not include in the description when you call and ask for the bill, the itemized bill with CPT codes, if that is not included, then you need to call the provider and talk with them about the care that was given in terms of the correct description and affixing of applying of the correct CPT code for the services that you were given. Really, really important. So if you feel that you or a loved one has been wrongfully billed for care related to COVID-19, please bring it to the attention of your insurance company and hospital or urgent care facility or physician's office, wherever you receive services. So to make things even more confusing about who's responsible for paying for COVID-19 tests, you know, the patient or insurance companies, the government said that insurance plans only have to waive patient out-of-pocket costs for, quote, medically appropriate tests, unquote. So the problem is the guidelines don't clearly say which tests are considered medically appropriate. So if there's no specific guidelines saying which tests are appropriate to be billed with a COVID-19 evaluation when you go to get medical care, who do you think the providers are going to try to stick with the bill? Yeah, right? They're going to try to stick the patients with the bill. The patients are always going to be stuck in the middle unless there is a federal law protecting otherwise. We're it. Because the U.S. government told insurance plans to waive patient costs for COVID-19 testing to make sure everyone had access to care, many ERs and urgent care facilities aren't sending bills to patients for COVID-19 testing beyond what their insurance plans cover, meaning they're not balanced billing. Right? Balanced billing is when you go to an in-network provider meaning they accept your insurance and they send you a bill for the difference between what your insurance pays and what they like to charge for their full retail rate. So, okay, for this, that's the deal with those of us that had insurance during the time that we were treated for COVID or are getting evaluated and or treated for COVID. But what about those of us who don't have insurance? So again, uninsured patients are stuck with a humongous, gigantic bill. So to try to help with this, the COVID-19 claims reimbursement to healthcare providers and facilities for testing, treatment, and vaccine administration for the uninsured program was created in 2020 by bipartisan federal law. Providers and facilities who had conducted COVID-19 testing of people who were uninsured or provided treatment to uninsured individuals with a COVID-19 primary diagnosis or administered an authorized COVID-19 vaccine to uninsured people on or after February 4, 2020 could request payment through the program and get reimbursed at Medicare rates. Yeah, it was great while it lasted. That's the good news. The bad news is as of March 23rd of this year, the money ran out for coverage of COVID-19 testing and treatment for uninsured individuals. And they stopped as of March 23rd, stopped accepting claims for reimbursement through that program. And as of April 5th, vaccination coverage for the uninsured funds ran out. And as of April 5th, this program stopped accepting claims for reimbursement for vaccines for those COVID vaccination for those that are uninsured. If you're uninsured and you receive a bill for COVID-19 related care, treatment, or vaccination after March 23rd and April 5th of 2022, then apply the three steps. It's really important. This is a great example of why we have to apply the three steps of the only right way to pay a medical bill to every medical bill that we receive. Number one, call for an itemized bill with CPT codes. Call the provider's billing manager, office manager, or billing department or patient accounts department. Two, Google the CPT codes and determine what care was received. Make sure that that makes sense with the care that you received. Accurately, from your perspective, describes the care that you received. And Google what Medicare pays for that service, for that CPT code. And three, always ask for an interest-free payment plan that fits your budget. So if you get a big bill of $20,000, you don't have insurance, and you Google the CPT codes for the care you received that was itemized on your bill. The Medicare rate is what you've negotiated down to. Whatever that rate is, whether you were successful or not to getting it completely down to what Medicare pays for that service or the services you received, always ask for an interest-free payment plan that fits your budget. It doesn't matter how long it takes you. So let's say you have a $20,000 bill. If you're saying, you know what, I can only afford $250 a month, then that's what you can afford. Stick to that number. So the patient accounts person might say, well, you know, that means it'll take such and such, you know, years and years before we get paid. Well, okay. You know, a little bit of something is better than nothing. And they save a lot of money not having to chase you for it. Don't let them talk you into, you know, their response may be, you know, that it'll take years and years and years. Can you do 500? Can you do 350? No. If you can only do 250, stick with that number. You're listening to Ask a Doctor, What Your Doctor Wants You to Know with Dr. Virgie on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll be back after this short break.
Are you one of the millions of Americans struggling with their medical bills? Now there is a way to get the health care you need and take care of your financial life. Dr. Virgie Bright Ellington is an internal medicine physician, and she's a determined patient advocate, helping people reduce and even eliminate their medical debt. Become a member today and discover how to free yourself from a lifetime of bills at CrushMedicalDebt.com. Join the Crush Medical Debt community today. Sign up at CrushMedicalDebt.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Ask a Doctor, What Your Doctor Wants You to Know with Dr. Virgie. If you have a question for Dr. Virgie or her guests, you can email Dr. Virgie at dr.virgie@crushmedicaldebt.com. Now back to the show. Here again is Dr. Virgie.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
The second thing everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis. Providers are using COVID-19 touchless protocols as an excuse to trick Americans to contribute to the $1 trillion medical debt crisis. So what that means is, basically, we have to stop signing electronic pads. Stop signing those electronic signature pads that now when you go into every healthcare facility, doctor's office, emergency room, they all have these electronic pads, and they will tell you, sitting behind a COVID-19 barrier and a mask, blah, 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 sign here. And they hand you just this one pad that's about, 8 inches wide and 2 inches tall, no more than that, connected to their computer, and they hand it to you and give you a little stylus and tell you to sign it. No. So they're saying that this is a consent for treatment and consent for financial agreements to pay for treatment. The thing is, we are used to getting handed sheets of paper with a lot of fine print. But they were paper. You could protect yourself from making a commitment to pay whatever the medical facility wants to charge you by finding the section that talks about getting bills. When you found that section, you could exit out and then write in, "I agree to appropriate treatment and charges up to 2 times Medicare rates." Initial it, sign it below, and you were done. Now, I use the number 2 times Medicare rates because that's what a lot of folks that are doing this kind of work, trying to educate Americans and the American public about becoming medically financially literate and protecting themselves and their families, they say, okay, I'll agree to up to 2 times Medicare rate. Well, I always suggest, hey, I like starting at just the Medicare rate. If it's good enough for Medicare, it would be good enough for me. The facilities often say, and providers often say, well, we can't afford Medicare rates for everyone. It's so low that we can't afford it to let everyone pay such a low discounted rate. Well, that's what I'm agreeing to. If it's an emergency, that's what they're going to accept. And if it's really an emergency, you're not able to sign anyway. So no, you're not going to sign away your rights by just signing a plain electronic pad. So the reason why you need to X out all that financial jargon and replace it with this statement, "I agree to appropriate treatment and charges up to Medicare rate or 2 times Medicare rate," is because by federal law, the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act, dating back to the 1970s, debt collectors must be able to show a signed financial agreement to come after you at any point in the future for any debt they claim you owe. Now, healthcare facilities are asking you to sign these electronic pads, which are connected to nothing. And so anything can be put in later, and are preventing you from being able to X out the commitment to pay section and write in what you agreed to pay. You know, appropriate treatment and charges up to 2x Medicare rates or up to Medicare rates. Ah, you sign this and you've just given the entire medical system a signed blank check. Years down the road, they, or whoever they sell your alleged unpaid bill to, according to the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act, can come after you in court to garnish your wages and just devastate your entire financial future. Don't fall for it, folks. Don't become a statistic in one of the $1 trillion of medical debt owed in this country. So what you're going to do is when they, meaning the customer service reps, those folks on the front line in a medical care facility, ask you to sign a signature pad, here, sign this, or an iPad, or any kind of signature, electronic signature device, say, no, I'm not going to be able to sign that. Can you please print out a copy of this consent? Can you please print out a copy of what you're asking me to consent to and sign? Can you please print out a copy of this? I don't sign things where I can't read it and I can't have a copy. I need a hard copy in paper to be able to sign this. Otherwise, I won't be able to sign it. That's what you're going to do to protect yourself. You're not going to fall for it. Third thing everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis is that healthy people in their 20s and 30s are among the highest risk of getting trapped by medical debt. And why is that? Is that folks in their 20s and 30s who are healthy, you know, we're doing stuff, we're working out, we're exercising, we're running, we're biking, we're just doing it. We're the ones, I'm not going to say we, I can't say that anymore. I'm not in my 20s or 30s anymore, but I thought the same thing. I thought, well, I don't need health insurance because I'm healthy. Well, the problem is that an accident or injury can happen to anyone. And even though it's uncommon, the younger you are, things still happen. You can be diagnosed with a serious illness. And there you are, you're flapping in the breeze, just there. So unprotected. So what I suggest is that if you're age 29 or younger, that you sign up for at least catastrophic coverage through the Affordable Care Act in the marketplace, the Affordable Care Act marketplace, federal marketplace, that is healthcare.gov. If you sign up for a catastrophic plan, which you're no longer eligible after age 20, if you're 29 or younger, you can get a plan that just covers catastrophic coverage, meaning it doesn't cover just routine medical visits, or if you have like a pneumonia, you know, you're short of breath and having difficulty with breathing, or you just don't feel well, you go to your doctor, your primary care doctor's office, or if you don't have a primary care doctor, you go to an urgent care facility, they diagnose you, they treat you, great, but that's not going to be covered by catastrophic care policies, insurance policies. But God forbid you're hit by a car when you're biking, or you have another injury or a serious illness that requires you to have extensive hospitalization for a long period of time. Many of these catastrophic coverage policies for those age 29 and younger can help. They can go a long way, and it's better than nothing. But once you get to 29 and over, please look for a policy that has a monthly premium that's within your budget. It's not going to be totally comprehensive and cover everything from A to Z that you would like, but it's better than nothing if, again, God forbid, something happens and you're injured or in an accident. The fourth thing everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis, because 80 to 90% of all medical bills have mistakes, most Americans, even those of us with great insurance, are just one injury or illness away from a lifetime of debt or bankruptcy. So this goes to what we were talking about in number three, things everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis, is that things happen, life happens. We get injured, we get sick. If you don't, if we're fortunate enough, like many of us are fortunate to skate through our 20s, 30s, 40s with no significant medical problems, great, awesome. You may have gotten a medical bill for just things that were maybe a routine checkup, or maybe you had a really nasty cough that didn't go away after a cold for weeks and weeks, and you go in and you were diagnosed with bronchitis, taken care of, fine, or maybe you had a UTI, a urinary tract infection. Okay, you've gotten a bill for those things, but because it was not a huge catastrophic event where you're in a hospital requiring care for a long period of time, you didn't notice that those bills had mistakes, because the mistakes that are not in your favor, of course, they're going to be in the favor of the medical care providers and or the insurance company. Those mistakes, you're not going to really notice, right? So if it's a $200 bill that really should be maybe a $100 bill, it's not something that's going to devastate your financial future. However, if you have a serious illness or injury where you have to have, you know, a hip replacement surgery, let's for an example, if 80 to 90% of the bills associated with your hip injury surgery adds up, you know, that 80 to 90% of mistakes in multiple days of care and or surgeries or hospitalizations, that's going to add up. And so, and instead of saying, oh my gosh, you know, you're not going to notice a $200 bill really that should have been $100 if you've applied the three steps to the only right way to pay a medical bill. You're going to get a, let's say a $20,000 bill that maybe should only be $10,000 or less. Those are the numbers where you can get into trouble. So that's why, because 80 to 90% of all medical bills that are generated in the United States have mistakes, this is the reason why most of us are just one injury. Most of us living in this country are just one injury, accident, illness away from a lifetime of debt or bankruptcy. So again, because of this, it's really, really important that we apply the three steps of the only right way to pay a medical bill. Every time we get a bill, pull it up, make sure it has a CPT code for each service for which you're billed. Step one. Step two, and by the way, if it's not there, if you don't see CPT codes, which are five digits usually, under a headline of CPT or CPT slash HCPCS, HCSCS, PCS rather, then you're going to call the provider's office and ask for an itemized bill with CPT codes. Then number two, you're going to take each of those codes and Google it to see that the definition generally describes what you think is the care that you received and what Medicare insurance, the government Medicare insurance, pays for those codes. Then number three, you're going to ask for an interest-free payment plan that's within your budget that you can afford. Okay, things everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis, number five. The United States' $1 trillion medical debt crisis is a major contributor to falling health and wellness among Americans. Because when people have medical bills they put off or can't pay off, they don't get the care that they need. When we have bills that are racking up, we know going back to the doctor to get the care that was advised by the doctor that we, you know, follow up with them, with the physician or another physician or service, or get a prescription filled, it doesn't happen because we're afraid of adding more to the bill. So there are a lot of studies that are demonstrating that because the medical bill and debt crisis is at a point in the United States where more than half of every person living in the United States has some form of medical debt, folks are putting off care that is going to make things more expensive and unfortunately more dangerous and detrimental to your health down the road. The sixth thing that everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis is that sometimes when people think they're buying insurance, they're not buying insurance. In a feature in Kaiser Health News, which is an online newsletter that features people struggling with medical bills, they were told about complaints of approximately 10 consumers in a 2 or 3 month period who complained that they thought they were buying insurance, but found out later they had been sold a membership to a healthcare sharing ministry. Healthcare sharing ministries are faith-based organizations whose members agree to share medical expenses. Now, these ministries grew in popularity before the ACA, the Affordable Care Act's mandate for having insurance coverage was repealed, because they were so much cheaper than insurance, but they're not insurance. And they're not regulated like insurance is, and they often don't cover members' medical bills. So these ministries and aggressive ads and websites posing as the official health insurance marketplace have gotten people to sign up for what they thought was some form of insurance through the ACA. So unfortunately, running into these issues while shopping online for health insurance is not uncommon. There was a report in 2021 at the Georgetown University Center on Health Insurance Reforms found that, quote unquote, misleading marketing practices were sending consumers online to alternative health plans like ministries that can end up costing more than the marketplace plans, the official marketplace plans, ACA marketplace plans, but offer fewer protections. So you do a Google search and you land on a series of what the advertising industry calls, quote unquote, lead generating websites, which are non-governmental web pages that connect insurance brokers to consumers. Now, let's say down the road, you find out that, oh my gosh, this is an insurance. You can always cancel it. You can cancel these share plans. But, you know, many times these folks that at least who complained to and told their story to Kaiser Health News said that the process was frustrating. It took a long time to get a refund, and they were left to sort out payment for bills that they incurred while they thought they were insured. So protect yourself. If you're shopping for insurance, health insurance, please make sure you stick to the site healthcare.gov.
You're listening to Ask a Doctor, What Your Doctor Wants You to Know with Dr. Virgie on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll be back after this short break.
Are you one of the millions of Americans struggling with their medical bills? Now there is a way to get the healthcare you need and take care of your financial life. Dr. Virgie Bright Ellington is an internal medicine physician, and she's a determined patient advocate, helping people reduce and even eliminate their medical debt. Become a member today and discover how to free yourself from a lifetime of bills at crushmedicaldebt.com. Join the Crush Medical Debt community today. Sign up at crushmedicaldebt.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Ask a Doctor, What Your Doctor Wants You to Know with Dr. Virgie. If you have a question for Dr. Virgie or her guests, you can email Dr. Virgie at dr.virgie@crushmedicaldebt.com. Now back to the show. Here again is Dr. Virgie.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Number 7 of 10 things everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis. The No Surprises Act that went into effect January 1st, 2022, has already prevented more than 2 million surprise medical bills just in the first 2 months of 2022. And this is according to a study by AHIP, the American Health Insurance Plans, American Association of Health Insurance Plans. So the No Surprises Act requires that care that is given to patients who have insurance and don't have the ability to choose their provider, meaning to make sure they are in network, the out-of-network providers, whatever providers they see, whether they're in-network or out-of-network, but definitely out-of-network, they have to accept either the payment that their insurance would otherwise offer an in-network provider, or negotiate directly with the insurance company for a payment that they agree with, instead of holding the patient in the middle responsible for the difference. So surprise billing is a form of balanced billing where people unknowingly receive care from out-of-network providers. And this is actually a business model for many kinds of companies, large companies and private equity companies that would hire groups of physicians, specialties, who are often folks that you have no control over picking, like emergency medicine docs, pathologists. Those are the folks that read your samples. Let's say that you have surgery and they take something out. The pathologist is someone who looks at it to determine, under a microscope, to determine if it's benign, meaning non-cancerous, or malignant, meaning cancerous. You don't have any control over that. Radiologists, those are the folks that read to your x-rays or your imaging to figure out if you have a broken bone or not from an injury or another problem. So this is what the main thing that the No Surprises Act covers. And it's been doing a phenomenal job. A million per month of surprise medical bills that would have all otherwise gone to folks, and they were stuck with being victimized by this American healthcare system, being basically a cost victim of, you know, getting around the system and saying, well, we don't accept any insurance, so we're always out of network, and you're going to have to pay the difference between what your insurance pays and what we charge. Nope, no more, no mas. So that's awesome. It's really, really great news. The second thing that the No Surprises Act required is that if you don't have insurance, if you're what's called self-pay or cash paying, that every provider has to give you a good faith estimate before you receive services, you know, particularly if they're not emergent, right? We usually don't have control over going to an emergency room if we're incapacitated or severely injured or unconscious. That's not an option. But for services that you have control over scheduling on some level, there has to be a good faith estimate, meaning everything that's involved with the services that they offer, a price tag has to be attached to it. And if there is more than a $400 difference, once you get the bill after you receive the services between what they gave you on their price list and the bill you received, then the difference has to be contested. So awesome news. Things everyone should know about: the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis, number 8. The federal government is trying to help by creating regulations to have medical debt treated differently than consumer debt, particularly for veterans. This is awesome news. This is great stuff. So the first thing that was done is that the credit agencies are no longer allowed to keep medical debt bills that have been paid off, or medical bills, medical debt that have been paid off. They're no longer allowed to keep them on your record, on your credit score, essentially, for 7 years, like normal debt, like consumer debt. It's medical bills are now broken out and no longer considered regular consumer debt. So as soon as those bills are paid off, instead of saying on there on your credit report for 7 years, they have to be removed right away. That goes into effect as of July 1st, 2022. The second thing that the credit agencies are required to do is to wait 12 months instead of 6 months before the medical bills or debt that is being disputed or unpaid, allegedly, by the provider is allowed to have reported on your documented or reported on your credit report. So that gives you more time. It gives you 6 months more to work out any disputes with the provider. That's a big deal, giving you more time to say, look, you know what, this bill is not accurate, and we're going to have to talk about this because I'm not paying this. I don't feel this is accurate. I'm disputing this. It gives you time to dispute the bill, like clarify things if you have insurance, clarify or dispute a denial of coverage, or you feel that the provider made serious mistakes in generating that bill. That also goes into effect July 1st, 2022. The third thing that the federal government did, and that's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has put into effect, is any bill, medical bill, less than $500 can no longer be reported to credit agencies. It can no longer be on your credit report. And that goes into effect in 2023. That's a big deal. Number 4, the Department of Agriculture has decided, when they are determining loan calculations and other calculations for providing credit or loans for things like they're trying to extend it to even mortgages affiliated with the federal government, like the FHA. Medical debt can no longer be included in the calculations to determine your loan to payment ratio, like what you can afford. If they feel you have too many outstanding debts or bills, then they say, well, no, you can't afford a loan, or you can only afford a mortgage or a loan up to a certain amount. So if you're not including medical debt as part of your consumer debt or other bills, that's a big deal. That's a big help. That goes a long way. And finally, to try to help veterans, meaning the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the federal agency that helps, that was put into place to help protect American consumers, are now saying that Veterans Administration debt cannot be reported to credit agencies. The number one complaint that the CFPB received in 2021 was wrongful debt collections, meaning being accused of and debt collectors trying to say that they owe debt, these veterans owe debt that they didn't owe. Either they never owed it or it was paid off. But that was the number one complaint to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in 2021. Crazy, right? And you know, for our veterans, you know, the folks that take care of us, and this is what we do to them, that it's just outrageous. And these are great steps to making sure we take care of our folks that take care of us. Things everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis. Number nine, you can protect yourself from being a statistic, from being one of the $1 trillion of medical debt by running the three steps of the right way to pay a medical bill against every medical bill you receive. So that's number one. Call for an itemized bill with CPT codes for every bill you get. Make sure it's an accurate bill. An accurate bill is an itemized bill. An itemized bill has CPT codes. So you're going to call the doctor's office, the hospital billing or patient accounts department, the physical therapy office, to make sure that you have an accurate bill. If what you're seeing, what was mailed to you, doesn't have CPT codes on it, it's not an accurate bill. Call for an accurate bill with CPT codes, an itemized bill with CPT codes. Step two, Google each of the CPT codes. Once you get a bill, an accurate itemized bill that has CPT codes, Google each of those codes and the Medicare rate or the price fees that Medicare pays for each of those services that the codes represent to find out what Medicare pays for each of those codes. Because you're going to take that information and go to step three. You're going to call back the billing department or patient accounts department and say, this is what I'm willing to pay and or able to pay. Essentially, we all want to do our best to, you know, pay for the services that we were given and say, you know what, this is what I can do. This is what Medicare pays for it. And this is what I can do. I can't do anymore. Can you give me an interest-free payment plan that is such and such a month because this is all that I can afford? It doesn't matter if it takes you years and years and years and years to pay it off. Please stick to your monthly budget. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to pay it off. What everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis, number 10, nonprofit hospitals, which are 65%, the majority of the hospitals in the United States, are estimated to contribute up to 30% of the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis by not providing sliding scale financial assistance to patients that they've agreed to cover in exchange for tax exempt status. So what this means is that in exchange for tax exempt status, they don't pay taxes on any of their revenues. Nonprofit facilities, medical care facilities, have agreed to provide financial assistance. Sometimes it's called financial aid. Sometimes it's called charity care. But basically, a sliding scale according to your income of what you're able to pay for the medical services that you were provided. And sometimes the bill may be so significant, even if you have a relatively large income, you may not have the resources, according to their calculations, their formula, to pay for any of it. You know, sometimes the bills get completely written off if your income is low enough in relation to the bill. So it's really, really, really important that if you were given care at a nonprofit facility and you receive a bill that's really out of your ability to pay, after you apply the three steps, right, you're going to not just take the bill and just pay for it right away. You're not going to automatically pay for it. You're going to make sure that you got an itemized bill with CPT codes and then figure out what the Medicare rate is for each of those CPT codes by Googling those codes and plugging them in. And three, you're going to say, okay, this is what I can pay. If it turns out, hey, you know what? I can't pay this. They're going to ask you to submit information about your finances and records. If it turns out that it's really above your ability to pay because the number is so large in relationship to your income, they're agreeing to cover that either 100% or again, a sliding scale. And this is in the agreement essentially with the federal government, with the IRS, to cover those folks in their community. We have a bonus, what everyone should know about the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis. And that is providers and banks are getting in on the game to have you pay medical bills automatically. No. So the problem is the providers are saying, hey, we've got our own automatic payment plan, or we have our own credit card, our own internal hospital system credit card, or partner where it's just a medical credit card. And here, when we send you a bill, all you have to do is sign up and pay low monthly payments with our credit card. And banks are getting into the action too. They're creating medical credit cards, which are supposed to be at zero or low interest rate if paid off over a period of time. But the cards, no matter what they are, you cannot pay them automatically. You cannot pay the bills automatically with these cards. Why? Because they're likely, meaning 80 to 90% chance of still being wrong and more than what you should be paying. So again, whenever we get a medical bill, we need to run the three steps of the run right way to pay a medical bill, meaning run specifically the CPT codes of every medical procedure or service that you received against the medical bill, against every medical bill you receive. If we don't, we're 8 to 9 times out of 10 paying for something we totally should not pay. So a good example of this is one of the cases from last week's episode of Medical Bill Mistakes of the Week. There was a woman who was charged $40 to have the baby after delivery. She went in to have a baby, and she was charged $40 to have the baby put on her chest immediately after the baby was delivered. Now, this is why it's important to run the three steps against every bill, because the first step is to call and ask for an itemized bill with CPT codes that describes every service you're being charged for which you're being billed. And in my understanding, I don't know that there is such a thing as a CPT code for putting the baby on the mother's chest after delivery. I understand there are hundreds of thousands of CPT codes, and I only know a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of them, but this just doesn't seem like a thing. This does not seem like a thing to me. And let's say that I'm totally wrong and there is such a thing as a CPT code for putting the baby on the mother's chest after delivery. That is considered incidental. And again, we talked about the term incidental in last week's episode of Medical Bill Mistakes of the Week. Incidental is a fancy name for part of, or just normally commonsensical, I call incidental commonsensical, part of or inclusive to. The example I like to give is if you have a surgery, the provider cannot bill for making an incision and then bill for the rest of the surgery because making an incision is part of the surgery. It's incidental to a surgery. So you can't break it apart and unbundle it and say you're going to do a la carte and pay extra when it's broken out. One money, right? One fee for each service. So you're not going to want to automatically pay for any bill. Please don't, please don't, please don't. I know it seems easy and convenient. It's interest-free maybe, or a very, very, very low interest rate. If you pay it off before, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, that's great. But only after, only pay that and put it on these cards after you've run the three steps of the only right way to pay a medical bill against each bill to make sure you're not getting overcharged. So and it makes a big difference if on this, on these medical credit cards or payment plans automatically apply to a credit card. Your bill automatically apply to a hospital affiliated or medical care affiliated credit card. That's really tempting to do because it's easy, but why pay $2,000 for a service when maybe you might only owe $500 or less or $200? Run the CPT codes against every medical bill you receive. Do not automatically pay a medical bill. So there you go. The 10 things plus a bonus you need to know so the $1 trillion American medical debt crisis doesn't happen to you. If you've gotten something out of the show, write a review or hit 5 stars on the Apple Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to today's show. We hope we have given you some helpful tips to guide you through your medical journey. Until we talk again, have a beautiful week.